It was the Haqqani Network, the terrorist organization that is part of the Taliban, who captured these Westerners and they were holding them.
Pakistan helps secure the release of long-held American hostages. It's Friday, October 13th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Myanmar Army Chief downplays Rohingya crisis. More aid streams to refugees in Bangladesh. North Korea possibly using Kaesong Complex. A special toy robot. Big game hunting at the movies. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Pakistan's military has rescued a U.S.-Canadian family from a tribal region bordering Afghanistan, nearly 5 years after they were abducted by militants. U.S. National Caitlin Coleman and her Canadian husband Joshua Boyle went missing in Afghanistan in 2012, and the Afghan Taliban later claimed responsibility for kidnapping them. The group, which released two videos of the hostages while they were in captivity, had been demanding the release of their prisoners in exchange for Boyle and his wife. She gave birth to the couple's three children while in captivity. President Donald Trump praised the release of the family from, quote, captivity from the Haqqani Network, a terrorist organization with ties to the Taliban. He also called the development a positive moment in U.S.-Pakistan relations. Sarah Williams, host of VOA's International Edition, spoke with reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad about the rescue of the couple and their three children.
Well, what we know from the Pakistani military is that this rescue operation was conducted on Wednesday, and based on what they are calling actionable intelligence provided by the United States, and they rescued the couple and their three children from this Kuram tribal district, which borders Afghanistan, and that has been a known militant hideout for years. And that's where, according to officials, these hostages were being shifted from Afghanistan on October the 11th, like on Wednesday. And that is when the Pakistani military says it received intelligence tip from the United States, from U.S. officials, and they conducted the operation and rescued Caitlin Coleman and Joshua Boyle and their three kids who were actually born while the couple was in captivity.
Yeah, that's an amazing story.
You know, finally it brings an end to this ordeal that they were going through, like they were kidnapped somewhere in Afghanistan while they were there as tourists, and they were kidnapped and later in 2012, and later the Taliban insurgency claimed that they were actually responsible for the kidnapping, and they released two video of these hostages last year. In fact, one in 2013 and the second one in 2016. And in both the video messages, Coleman actually begged the U.S. authorities to negotiate with the Taliban so that they can be safely released and they could go back to their home. And let me just tell you that Taliban, during all these years, were demanding release of some of their prisoners who are being held either in Afghan prisons or in Bagram, which is being controlled. This is the air base, the largest air base the U.S. Is running in Afghanistan. So the Taliban wanted some of their prisoners to be released in exchange for these hostages. But it now clearly is evident that if Pakistan Army has rescued and there was a joint operation, that, you know, these people have been safely released without meeting any demands of the militants. And also, we know for sure, as per the information the U.S. military and U.S. officials have been providing, that it was the Haqqani Network, the terrorist organization that is part of the Taliban, who captured these Westerners and they were holding them. And this is the network, you know, that has been causing, you know, is a major irritant between the U.S. and Pakistan in terms of their bilateral relations, because U.S. officials and even Afghan leaders believe leaders of the Haqqani Network are based on the Pakistani side of the border and conducting militant activities in Afghanistan against the U.S.-led forces and Afghan security forces. So that's why we see this statement that the White House has issued, which obviously describes this as a positive moment for U.S. Relationship with Pakistan, because there has been tension and there have been irritants in bilateral relations, and this now shows that Pakistan is willing to cooperate in terms of helping the U.S. efforts to stabilize Afghanistan and root out terrorism from this region.
Well, and also Lisa Curtis, who is the National Security Council Senior Director for South and Central Asia, she visited Islamabad and held talks with Pakistani officials at the foreign ministry.
Yeah, this has been really interesting that whether it was a coincidence or whether she was here and in her presence, this whole thing was revealed to the media, but we don't know for sure. But as you know, Lisa Curtis, she's known in Pakistan as one of the architects for President Trump's new Afghan policy that he announced in August. And that policy really criticized Pakistan for not doing enough to counter regional terrorism and to prevent the Taliban from using Pakistani sanctuaries, allegedly, according to Washington, for orchestrating attacks in Afghanistan.
A U.S. defense official said the hostages are not in U.S. custody at this time. Quote, a U.S. plane was available for them, and they chose not to depart on it. Word of the couple's release came as Lisa Curtis, National Security Council Senior Director for South and Central Asia, visited Islamabad as the head of a high-level U.S. delegation and held talks with Pakistani officials at the foreign ministry. An official statement issued at the end of the visit Thursday said the two sides reviewed the state of their bilateral relationship in the wake of the new U.S. strategy on Afghanistan and South Asia and agreed to continue discussions on all matters of mutual interest. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Hamid Karzai says Trump's Afghan strategy fueling war and regional rivalries. Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi urges unity, creates new aid committee. Myanmar envoy denies genocide against Rohingya Muslims. Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines launch joint air patrols. Cambodia's fledging democracy in question. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also visit our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Myanmar Army Chief General Min Aung Hlaing Thursday downplayed the numbers of Rohingya Muslims who he refers to as Bengalis fleeing into Bangladesh as exaggerated. He blamed that on instigation and propaganda by media outlets. He said the native place for the Bengalis is really Bengal, assuming that they would be safer there. The general said they were in Myanmar as a result of British colonialists. The Army Chief's comments followed a meeting with the U.S. Ambassador, Scott Marcial, who reportedly expressed concern of the plight of more than 500,000 refugees linked to a military crackdown that began 7 weeks ago following attacks on security forces by insurgents. His remarks came a day after a U.N. human rights report exoriated security forces for burning villages and crops in a bid to drive the Rohingya Muslims out of Myanmar for good. Thomas Hunecki is a U.N. human rights officer.
The credible information we gathered indicates that the destruction of Rohingya villages in northern Rakhine states and other serious human rights violations committed in the aftermath of the 25 August attacks were executed in a well-organized, coordinated, and systematic manner. The credible information collected also indicates that the Myanmar security forces purposely destroyed the property of the Rohingya population, scorched their dwellings and entire villages in northern Rakhine State, not only to drive the population out in droves, but also to prevent the fleeing Rohingya victims from returning to their homes.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Said Raad Al-Hussein has described security operations as a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. Ka Nguyen, head of the Burma Human Rights Network in London, tells VOA's Victor Beatty what the Army Chief said is nothing new.
They're very good at lying the truth, you know, just because the people, public, as a normal public, they cannot, they are not access to Rakhine State. Even majority of the population in Burma, they've never been to Rakhine State, so they have no idea what's going on in Rakhine State. And also the Rakhine State has been locked, you know, never allowed Muslims to visit those places. The way he has been lying and countering the media, because an international media It's not like Burmese media. They are not controlled by any entities. So they are very free and they are revealing all the truth and all the reality on the ground. So what they are doing is they're trying to portray that Indian national media is biased, they are against our security, they are against our freedom. So they portray them, they create the fear of the international media. Now people have become very against the media because the media are talking truth, showing the reality on the ground. So they don't want them to see the reality. They also created the fabricated news. You know, the Hindus, they wear Hindus as a Muslim, dress like a Hindu, like a Muslim, and ask them to burn down the homes, and then they show to the media, using their local media, that the Muslims are burning down their homes. But later on, these same people, they're with the same dress, they've been spotted inside the Hindu camp. So then the big lie has been foiled, and I don't know, the Burmese army and the Burmese government, they don't have that kind of feeling, embarrassment. That's why they are very blunt at the line.
He spoke just a day after the UN Human Rights Office said that Myanmar security forces brutally drove about 500,000 Rohingya from their homes in northern Rakhine State, burned the homes, burned their crops, designed to make sure that they don't come back.
You know, because the more than 500,000 refugees, those who fled to Bangladesh, they are very clear and very clear evidence. They are very solid evidence. You don't even need to, listen what the government is saying. Just listen what these people have revealing. They cannot lie, people, because they are being suffering. They are being targeted. They are being mercilessly, they have been persecuted. So they are fleeing to the, right now, until today, the people are fleeing to Bangladesh.
Kya Win said his team on the ground in Myanmar reports that Rohingya Muslims are even barred from buying food. He said that is the main reason so many are fleeing the country. Happening now in Asia, the United Arab Emirates announced it will halt the issuance of visas to North Korean workers as tensions surrounding the country's nuclear ambitions continue to build. The move by the UAE follows similar policy changes from Kuwait and Qatar, which have already blocked visas to the country. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always happy to have you with us on VOA Asia. More aid has begun to pour into the camps in Bangladesh, where more than 500,000 Rohingya have fled from Myanmar. VOA Asia's Ira Melman reports a new stream of supplies is coming from the United Arab Emirates.
The UAE, together with the United Nations Refugee Agency, the UNHCR, has begun airlifting aid to Bangladesh, where an estimated 809,000 Rohingya are sheltering after fleeing violence and persecution in Myanmar. Hundreds of packages were loaded onto a plane in the early hours of Wednesday, mainly containing equipment for shelter, including tents and sleeping mats. Toby Harward heads the UNHCR office in the UAE.
The United Nations is facing the fastest developing refugee emergency in recent times. Indeed, the UN High Commissioner, Filippo Grandi, has said that in his long career with UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, he has not seen an emergency develop as fast as this one.
The collaboration between the UAE and the UN High Commissioner for Refugees will see regular delivery of aid to the refugees in Bangladesh, with two more airlifts planned this month. The UAE will provide the logistics, including storage and transportation, to deliver aid provided by the UNHCR. Bangladesh border guards reported more than 11,000 Rohingya refugees crossing into their country from Myanmar on Monday in a sudden surge.
Since the 25th of August, that's just 5 weeks ago, about 520,000 people have fled Myanmar into southern Bangladesh in the region of Cox's Bazar. This is, as I said, fairly unprecedented. UNHCR has already got a significant presence there in the south because there are about 300,000 Rohingya refugees who have been there since the 1990s.
More than 500,000 Rohingya have fled Myanmar since August 25th after insurgent attacks on security forces triggered a violent government crackdown. But aid agencies say the rate has slowed to about 2,000 refugees per day over the past week. Ira Melman, VOA Asia, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life?
Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia, at least 37 people are dead, another 40 missing, after floods and landslides devastated parts of northern and central Vietnam. The disaster was triggered by a tropical depression producing as much as 40 centimeters of rain. At least 16,000 homes have been submerged. Top stories and great features are found each day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, South Korean companies that were forced to shut down operations in the Kaesong Industrial Complex in North Korea in 2016 have petitioned the government in Seoul to investigate reports that Pyongyang has reopened the facility without their consent. The North-South joint venture was suspended last year to punish the Kim Jong-un government for conducting nuclear and missile tests and to cut off a possible source of funding for Pyongyang's illicit weapons development program. The corporate association of Kaesong Industrial Complex that represents the 123 South Korean manufacturing companies that operated factories in the North Korean facility said Thursday it wants to send a delegation to inspect their property. Kim So-jin with the Kaesong Industrial Complex Association says it's our asset, which we invested in according to North Korean law and procedures set by both governments of the two Koreas. So as owners with rights to the assets, it is necessary for us to check the situation. The South Korean Unification Ministry could not confirm the complex has been reopened, but did say recent bus movements and illuminated street lamps in the site have been observed. This news alert from VOA Asia. Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines began coordinated air patrols Thursday to intensify their fight against Islamic militants who have laid siege to a southern Philippine city. The air patrols came 4 months after the three countries launched joint maritime patrols to contain Islamic State group-aligned militants. Stop by VOA Asia Facebook for more stories and features. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, in this computerized age, some kids had the opportunity to play with robots. Scottish company Robotcal has developed an inexpensive toy robot that children can program to walk, dance, and even play some football. But besides having fun, the idea is that children will use the toys to learn about robotics and computer programming in school. VOA's Deborah Block tells us more about it.
This is Marty, a pint-sized robot that was created to foster children's interest in science and technology. The robot is made from 3D printable parts and remotely controlled by using a PC or smartphone. Unlike other walking robots that are usually basic and expensive, Marty is cheaper to make, plus its battery lasts longer because it's more energy efficient, says inventor Alexander Enoch.
What makes him special, sort of in the way that his legs work, is that we use fewer motors than a traditional walking robot would. So we've got a forwards and backwards and a side to side, and then this twisting movement. And that's quite different to how a normal robot would walk. It reduces the number of motors, which means it's cheaper to make, it's easier to program, easier to use, and the battery lasts a bit longer. And normally if you reduce the number of motors, you really compromise the behaviors it can do. But Marty can still walk and dance and turn and kick a ball and actually do interesting things. Also gives him a sort of distinctive swagger, which is quite entertaining.
Today, a number of children are learning coding in school, the language of technology that makes up computer software, mobile apps, and web pages. Enoch says Marty is easier to use and program than other toy robots. And while the kids are having fun, they are also learning hands-on coding, a skill many of them will need to know in the future. The inventor's 8-year-old niece is using her coding skills to make Marty dance.
It's not every day you get a chance to do robotics.
This 16-year-old student is using a more complex coding program.
I think it's great being able to learn robotics at basically any stage using one tool. It's really useful.
The entertaining but educational robot is for sale online at Robotical and costs $128 US. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
An American dentist's killing of Cecil the Lion, a collared 13-year-old lion monitored by the University of Oxford in Zimbabwe, sparked widespread outrage and condemnations of big game hunting. But Trophy, a new documentary by filmmakers Shaul Schwartz and Christina Clausel, offers a more complex perspective on trophy hunting as an industry. VOA's Penelope Palou says it's a narrative that blurs the lines between big game hunting and wildlife conservation.
People are confused how hunting and conservation go together.
You can just pick whatever animal you want from the menu that they offer you, see the price, and book the kill.
Big cats in 21 and 22, sold!
Trophy shows how a billion-dollar big game industry is financing the breeding of endangered species by exploiting a small percentage of these animals for the thrill of the kill, while conserving the rest and restoring their numbers in ranches, says filmmaker Shaul Schwartz.
That's kind of the idea of utilizing animals in this if it pays, it stays way. Now, is that the answer? I don't know. I'm here to raise questions, but I think what we should do in this subject is be less quick to judge and scream.
Crocodiles are really mean. Besides that, I want a pair of boots.
Filmmaker Christina Clusio says big game hunting caters to the rich, most of them Americans.
I couldn't believe that it was so vast and that you could buy hunts and you could buy your insurance and you could buy your clothing and your gear, everything for the safari.
Prices range from $8,000 for a buffalo to $45,000 for an elephant and $350,000 for a rhino. This big money industry helps the local communities where the hunts take place and discourages poaching, says Chris Moore, an anti-poaching campaign manager from Zimbabwe. He says while poaching destroys 30,000 elephants a year in Africa just for their tusks, trophy hunting kills 1,100 elephants annually, providing local communities with their meat and revenue.
Half of that trophy fee goes back in to building a clinic or school or whatever the community decides. They have committees and a trust which organizes where that goes.
But animal rights organizations do not see eye to eye with Moore. Associate Director of Campaigns for PETA, Ashley Byrne, condemns the big game industry.
Selling an endangered animal's life to raise money for conservation is like selling a child on the black market to raise money for an anti-trafficking organization. The best way to promote conservation is to protect animals' natural habitats and to invest in ecotourism that do make these animals commodities, but alive, not dead.
But Chris Moore says if trophy hunting were banned, the animals would no longer be seen as commodities to preserve, and poaching would increase.
When you're struggling to feed your child, you look for alternative means. I think if society maintained certain levels of prosperity, and I don't think we would really see poaching.
Trophy offers a vivid cinematic experience of wildlife in Africa while allowing for a chilling look into a vigorous big game hunt industry, starting with the hunter's enigmatic psyche.
This is my trophy, and there's not any bureaucrat that can take it away from me.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
A possible movie choice for you this weekend if you choose to go and see a movie. You've been listening to VOA Asia. We say hello to everyone listening to us on Media Biz Radio at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore and Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 in Chiang Mai University, Thailand. Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to everyone wherever you happen to be listening. We'd love to hear from you. Send us a message through Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also write to us by email, voaasia@voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Kevin Fowler, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, David Byrd, and Ira Melman on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a great day.